Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, gentle folk, to the final two episodes of Unfeatured Articles Season 2.
Yeah. Season 2 of Unfeatured Articles. Yeah, not the last ever.
I'm glad we brought it back, Carmina Burana.
Yes, absolutely. It wouldn't be a finale without it.
Exactly.
We are here.
I've been waiting so many moons.
Who are we?
Exactly.
My name is James Keir. I'm one of the hosts of Unfeatured Articles. I'm joined by Curtis Lang,
the other host of Unfeatured Articles.
And we are joined by UFA expert. We are joined by
doctoral candidate of UFA.
Yes. Who knows, who has gone through the whole storied history of UFA as a listener.
PhD,
B-E-N, it's Ben.
It is. Ben Barul.
Here I am. Thank you for joining us.
For my
second time.
We are so sorry that episode got deleted.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't aware, there was a secret episode 31 that we lost that was deleted accidentally and it disappeared into the ether. Mm-hmm. It was a great episode. Ben was on it.
I was.
Yep. And we'll never hear it again.
No.
A wink.
What's this? Oh,
is that a tease?
It's a teaser.
A future Unfeatured Articles kind of thing?
Oh, it might be.
Boys, stop lollygagging.
You nailed that.
Nice.
Fuck me.
Stuck the landing too.
Hold on, can I come back?
Yeah.
Hold on. So go back to your lollygagging.
Oh, bloody lollies. Ooh,
what about that episode?
Exactly.
Boys.
Yes.
Stop lollygagging. We've got an episode to do, and it's quite a serious one.
It is.
Yes, it is.
This episode, these two episodes, super important and super structured. We have a series of rounds. In fact, we have 5 rounds to determine which one is the greatest article of
2019.
Of 2019.
Yeah, season 2, 2019.
Indeed.
The way we're going to break it down, we have our first round. We're going to do round 1 and 2 in this episode, and then we're going to kick it forward with rounds 3 through 5 next episode. Round one, super. It's going to be very informative, very by the book, very structured. Here's
no
what's going to happen.
No bits allowed.
No bits.
None.
No bobs.
Zilch.
Zilch. We have.
I might choke a few bits.
Nada. No. Nada.
Oh, sorry.
Nada.
Get out of here with your bits.
You bloody
bit. Led you to a 2-hour bit last time.
An hour and a half.
Okay.
Here's what's going to happen. Each of the 32 articles that have made it to the final cut are going to be described in as much detail as possible in 45 seconds.
Yep.
They get 45 seconds each to give a complete rundown of what this article was about.
You know it.
2 by 2. And after each pair, we, on the count of 3, do our vote. It's going to be 3, 2, 1, vote.
Boof.
That's what it's going to be.
Sounds good.
I got to set that up at the start, you know. We don't want some, you know, 3, 2, boof. We don't want that. We don't want 3, 2, 1, go. You know, people do 3, 2, 1, go that. And then it's just not it.
So hang on. It's 3, 2, 1.
Article.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Scissors, paper. Oh, no.
That's
scissors,
not quite.
Scissors, paper, rock.
Article.
Yep. Okay, cool. No worries.
Wonderful. So, shall we just dive right in?
I think we need to.
We just dive right in? So for each of our articles, we have one person going up to bat. Our first pairing for the official bracket of 2019, it is varieties of Oreo, list of Oreo varieties as represented by Ben Brule.
Yes.
And Elmer McCurdy as represented by Curtis Lang.
Indeed.
All right, Zane, are you ready on the buzzer? The first 45 seconds for variety of Oreo flavors starts now.
Boy, howdy, there are a lot of Oreo flavors. Let me tell you what, and Wikipedia knows all about it. There's all kinds. There's lemon twist Oreo, Neapolitan Oreo.
My God.
There's a SpongeBob Oreo, watermelon Oreo. There's cookie dough, of course, but caramel apple as well. Pumpkin spice Oreo, red velvet. What about Toasted coconut. Does that tickle you? What about firework Oreos?
Firework.
For a limited release edition in 2017. What about the Mississippi Mud Pie Oreos? How about a mystery Oreo to tickle your fancy? Confirmed indeed to be all kinds of mysterious flavors. You never knew exactly what you were going to get. Chocolate hazelnut Oreo. There was cherry
that
cola
good.
Oreo. Good humor strawberry shortcake was another one.
That's your 45.
That's 45.
Many
Thank you very much, Ben.
It's tight.
That's tight. You got a lot in there, though.
Yeah. We should say now, 10. We try to make every episode as entry level as possible, so you can just dive right in and listen to what you want to do.
Yeah.
This one, there's going to be a lot of information thrown at you.
Oh yeah, get ready for it.
Yeah. If this is your first episode, is what I'm saying.
Maybe go back
and listen to a couple.
Say so. And if you maybe you go in there and you hear an episode, you hear like an article that you maybe not heard the thing for, go back and listen to it.
Yeah, or even jump on Wikipedia. Just have a quick little brief for yourself.
Okay.
Anyway, are we ready?
Elmer McCurdy. Your 45 seconds starts now.
So, Elmer McCurdy, he was an American bank and train robber who was killed in a shootout with police after robbing a caddy train in Oklahoma in October 1911. The interesting thing about him, though, is that because no one claimed his body after it was in, back then, coroners, they would, embalm the body. So the thing that was interesting was that because no one claimed the body, the coroner just refused to release the body because he had not received the money that he'd gotten. So he sat it up in the corner of his workshop and like charged people a penny, like a look to see like the bandit who wouldn't give up, and used it as an attraction. The body was then, it went on this massive journey. It was stolen a bunch of times.
And if we want to hear more, we have to vote it into the next round.
That's right. Okay,
this
guys.
This is hard, James.
This is very hard. It's 45
tricky.
Seconds
it's brutal.
Very
it's brutal.
Particular. Let's vote. All right. Do you remember how it goes? Okay. I cannot stress this enough. It's 3-2-1 article. All right. Have we got it?
3-2-1 boof.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Okay. Here we go. 3-2-1.
Elmer McCurdy.
All right.
All right. There it is. Elmer McCurdy has made it through to the next round. I'm writing it in. Here we go. Elmer.
Are we allowed to vote?
Thank you.
There it is.
Yeah,
in this particular one.
Vote for our own.
It's hard not to because, but we come into this room unbiased.
Yeah.
Of course.
For the good of the information of the people.
Leave our biases at the door.
Exactly. Mm.
I think
except,
yeah.
Except Ooh. We're only biased about ice cream flavors.
Yeah, yeah.
Neapolitan.
Or,
Nia,
or
get
nothing.
Out of here.
Oh,
whoa.
I'm the opposite. I'll fight you.
Who wants strawberry? Like, you eat the chocolate first. And
you tolerate the strawberry.
You like the strawberry, Zane? All right,
Zane likes the strawberry.
I'll take strawberry.
Maybe we should get a tub of Neapolitan. Pause
Boys,
the podcast.
Here we go again. No.
All right, what do we got next, James?
Next up, we got Hubert Blaine. Long last name.
Oh, the man with the longest name in the world. That's right, yep.
That's the one.
As represented by myself.
Will you have enough time to say his entire name in 45 seconds?
Once, and that's it. And I don't get to describe it anymore.
There is a sound recording of the guy himself saying it.
Really?
On the Wikipedia page.
If
you want to find that and just hold it up to the microphone, that might be the best way to do that.
I'm going
to
use my time very wisely.
All righty, fair enough.
Okay.
Let me just get mine up.
Coming up against... let me just find it here. It is coming up against Sasquatch Mountain... Resort.
The surprise winner from episode 32, last week's episode.
Yeah.
Thanks, Truby Cannon, for that. We can now reveal, ladies and gentlemen, it might not have been very clear on that episode, but Drew was several wines deep.
A little bit.
All right. Are you up first, James?
I am.
All right.
Okay.
Whenever you are ready, my friend.
Okay.
Time to go.
Time starts. Now, Hubert Blaine Wolfschlegenstein Hausenbergendorf Sr. Is the reduced name of the man with the longest name in the world. Adolf Blaine, Charles David, Earl Frederick, etc. It is a 988-letter surname. This is a man who was born in Bergedorf in Germany and later emigrated to the United States. His name first attracted attention when it appeared in the 1938 Philadelphia telephone directory on page 1292. He changed it, I assume, from whatever originally was, or maybe it was always his name. He had a son, Hubert Blaine Wolfschlegenstein, which he named the same thing, Jr. And this is a guy with a really long name.
James.
Nice. I think I got across the fact that it was a very long
episode. I think you did.
Which is what I was aiming for there.
Yeah.
All right.
I will just say very quickly that the reason he changed it was to make customs very mad because it was during the Second World War and he was of Jewish descent, I believe. So he was like, if I'm going to change my name, I'm going to make it a fucking insane one.
Right. Yes. It is his given name.
Might be spilling Human's over.
Human's given name is made up from 27 names, each starting with a different letter of the alphabet.
All right, well, next round we'll just have to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Provided it makes it through.
And okay. Something tells me it might be going through to the next round.
Curtis, your time starts now.
Guys, Sasquatch Mountain Resort is a really interesting article. It's a small ski resort located in the Douglas Ranges near Chehalis, British Columbia in Canada, between the towns of Mission and Agassiz. It is now going to be called Sasquatch Mountain. Previously known as Hemlock Valley Resort, the resort closed due to bankruptcy receivership in 2005. Wow! In 2006, the resort was purchased by Berezan Hospitality Group and reopened in December 2006. Shortly thereafter, the resort started negotiations with local First Nations and the province of BC for a substantial expansion that would see the resort become the largest resort facility in the lower mainland of British Columbia. And I'm...
That's all that I have.
The resort proposes time includes... It's got skis.
All right.
It's a ski resort.
Yeah, very nice.
It's a
nice.
Ski resort.
It's got skis. Okay.
So that was Drew's very weird bit from last...
All right. Week. Now we vote long name or Sasquatch. Here all we right. go. 3, 2, 1. Long name.
Obviously. All
right, cool. As if it could be anything else.
Yeah. All right. Hubert has made it through.
Excellent.
Next up, William Henry Rankin, as described by Curtis, and Calcio... Also described by Curtis.
Hmm.
There you go.
I'm doing a lot of talking in this first bit. All right, let's do this, gang. So first of all, I'm going to talk about Rankin. Yes.
Rankin. Yes.
Wonderful. Let me just get that up really quickly. Fill for me,
ready.
James. Fill for me.
All right.
Baby.
While you're getting there, ready. I just want to make sure everyone knows that when we're voting. So the structure of it is: it's 3, 2, 1. Than the article. I'm just worried that like sometimes someone's gonna like come through on like the three or something. Yeah.
So not the 3, 2, 1.
Gentlemen, I'm ready to go.
Okay, good.
I'll ask you later.
We'll discuss this.
All right. Are we good?
William Henry Rankin, your time starts now.
Wonderful. So Lieutenant Colonel William Henry Rankin was the only known person to survive a fall from the top of a cumulonimbus thunderstorm cloud. I got through it.
You got it.
So this guy fucking he was flying a F-8 Crusader jet fighter over a cloud when the engine failed, forcing him to eject the parachute into the cloud. So he pulled the lever to deploy the auxiliary power and it broke off in his hand. Not wearing a pressure suit, he had no choice but to eject the fucking seat. So he suffered immediate frostbite. Decompression caused his eyes, ears, nose, and mouth to bleed. His abdomen swelled severely. The parachute opened prematurely instead of at 10,000 feet. So he was just fucking battered around in the middle of this cloud. Insane.
It's crazy.
Truly.
Yeah. And my second one is what, James?
Your second one is Calcio.
Oh, damn. This is gonna be. All right. So, Calcio was the is an early precursor to football and rugby that originated in 16th century Italy. This was one of Zane's articles that he brought. It is an insane sport, right? So it's two teams of like an insane amount of people. The matches last 50 minutes. Each team has 27 players, and every time a player is like knocked out of the game, they just lose that player and no one comes in, right? So the aim of the game is to kind of knock out as many people as possible so that you can get your ball and score goals. The crazy thing is that when this game was first invented, you were allowed like fucking weapons and just to let like it's boxing, football, and all this stuff mixed together. It's insane. Like, yeah, and you're allowed weapons to just fuck up people.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
This horn's going to get really annoying.
This is a tough one.
This is rough. Yeah.
Okay.
This is a tough round.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we have our votes locked in our brains?
What are the buzzwords?
So we got Calcio or Rankin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Calcio or Rankin. Here we go. We're ready. 3, 2, 1. Rankin.
All right. But Calcio was really...
I'm sad to see Calcio leave.
That was on an unfeatured... basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because Calcio turned into football.
Yeah, that's
right. I mean, it's not very well known, but football is. But Mr. Rankin?
Turned into ash.
Yeah, he's dead. He's dead.
As we all will.
He's a dead man.
Yeah.
As we all will.
Okay.
Wonderful. Okay, and so what's up next, James?
Next up, you're back again, Curtis. We've got the great stink.
Excellent.
But I think I will take Bruce Willis's discography.
No, I. Do you want take to? The great stink?
Okay, I'll take the great stink.
And I think I'm doing the great
stink. Yeah, sorry, Ben's actually taking the great stink.
Oh, sorry, I had
no,
it wrong.
I'll take the great stink.
No, I'm Spartacus.
You take the great stink.
I'll take the great stink.
Curtis, you take Bruce Willis's discography.
I think I said before we started recording, like, I remember last season that, like, my favorite to win was the 52 Hertz Whale.
Yeah.
I didn't really have one this season. It actually is Bruce Willis's discography. I love this
All right.
But I'm going in unbiased.
Yeah, of course, of course.
All right, so who's up first?
First up is the great stink.
Wonderful.
As done by Ben. Ben, are you ready?
I am.
Your time starts now.
All right. So the Great Stink was an event in central London in 1858, which was basically the hot weather exacerbated the smell of untreated human waste and effluent present on the banks of the River Thames. So basically this problem was mounting for a number of years just because they didn't have an adequate sewer system. The miasma from the effluent was thought to transmit contagious diseases, and three outbreaks of cholera before the Great Stink were blamed on the ongoing problems of the river. So the smell and the fears of the possible effects prompted action to try and find a solution. So they basically tried very hard to fix their problem, and more or less it was just riffed on by the townsfolk for quite a bit, just because they weren't a huge fan of the cesspits all over the city. There you go,
the great stink, everybody. Are you ready, Curtis?
I am.
Your time starts now.
So, we all know Bruce Willis, right? Die Hard.
We do.
Die Hard, one of the greatest Christmas film of all time. An unfeatured part of his career is that he has a discography, which means that he has released multiple albums. All right. The first album was The Return of Bruno. And this album is an eclectic gathering of R&B music sung by Willis, with backing musicians including Booker T. Jones, the Pointer Sisters, most famous for Jump on My Hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
that was an excellent. And The Temptations. It is a companion piece to a HBO special of the same title. So this album was like a comedy kind of like mockumentary style album. However, his follow-up album, If It Don't Kill You, It Just Make You Stronger, is not a comedy album. It is very serious. Yeah.
Whoa. All right. Well, those are our two picks between Stink and Bruno. Stink and Bruno. On three, we are going to vote. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, Bruno.
It's been unanimous so far, gentlemen.
We are in sync.
We are in sync.
Not bad.
Okay.
That shall soon change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm ready to fight.
Do we all have our favorites? We don't
I've
have to tell
few.
Them what they
I've
are.
Got a few.
Yeah, I definitely have a few that I lean towards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Let's move on. We've got the Ilu, as represented by Curtis, and the Corrupted Blood Incident, as represented by Ben. I'm taking it easy this app so far. I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
I'm adjudicating. It's great. And Curtis, are you ready with the Ilu?
I am.
Okay, your time starts now.
So the Ilu was a cancelled Microsoft project to develop a Wi-Fi internet-enabled portable toilet. Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. It was a portable toilet that they were going to put up in different places all around the place, that was going to have a it was like, yeah, you would sit on the toilet and there would be a keyboard and a screen in front of you, and you could browse the internet and do whatever you wanted to while that was happening. Microsoft then came out and was like, haha, this was actually just a April Fool's joke, despite the fact it was not anywhere near April, I believe. Yeah, it was the project was on May 13th. Another Microsoft press release stated that although the project had not been a, it was, and then they said actually it's not a hoax, and then they said it's not been a hoax. Oh, I'm so sorry, James. There were so many twists and turns with that one. It wasn't a hoax, was it not? I don't know
exactly. This is all good.
Yeah, it's very funny though. Yes. Like a fucking. The last thing you want to touch when you're shitting is a keyboard, right? A fuck. Like, you're not even like, this is pre hand washing.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Keyboards are already the grossest thing in the world. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Ben, you up?
Yes.
I am. I'm very ready.
With the Corrupted Blood Incident, are you ready?
Such a good article.
Okay, your time starts Now,
so the Corrupted Blood incident was an incident of a virtual pandemic in World of Warcraft in 2005. Oh, basically, there was an end boss, Hakkar, that would cast a spell that was a hit point draining and highly contagious debuff spell called Corrupted Blood on the players. Now, what happened, there was a glitch where instead of the debuff ending as soon as you exited like the arena, it stayed with you and more or less would start to actually kill you outside of the battle.
And it was infectious as
well. It was super infectious. And what would happen is that this glitch spread all throughout the game. What was really interesting is that they started to use it as a model for epidemic research. So some researchers got word of it and were like, oh my God, this is actually a really cool way to, you know, investigate the similarities between like SARS and avian influenza outbreaks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I love that. It's like such a great piece article. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I will say, yellow card, not for lollygagging, but for some tomfoolery with your interjection there, Mr. Lang.
I'm not allowed to interject?
I mean, you know, we've got one person per article representing. I'm just saying, it's a yellow card.
Fair
it's
enough.
Yellow card.
Yellow card.
Yeah.
Just a warning.
Just a warning. Just
all
a
right,
warning.
Fair enough.
You know, basically. It's okay. Let's all vote.
This is the most structured we've ever done. Yeah. I can't believe there are now rules.
And ever will be again.
Yeah.
We have Ailu and Blood. We're going to vote on three. Wait, hold on. Let me get my vote.
Hang on. Yeah. On three or after three?
Oh, well, yeah. Let me make this very clear.
Yes.
After three.
Okay.
If it hasn't already been.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you guys have your votes?
I do.
This one's tough. 3, 2, 1. Blood. Ailu. Okay.
It's our first one.
I will take it. Like, I'm not, you know, too mad about that because I'm all happy for Blood to go through.
Fair enough.
Because I remember I was playing games when this happened and I remember, like, it coming up on the internet of, like, literal streets in World of Warcraft covered in player corpses. Yeah.
Well, we can talk about it more in the next one.
I just wanted to be like, it was
a big deal.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Next up. I think it's the bloody James Keogh hour.
Yeah, it is.
We
have yours.
The Sharknado film series.
Which is, by the way, we should mention our host choice.
Host choice.
Because we did have our when Lachlan and Drew first joined us, we actually had a special two-parter episode where we chose one at the end of that, which turned out to be Lord Byron, and then we nixed Lord Byron.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know about that, go look at it. But we decided, because we only had 31 articles, one that, like, we were devastated that wasn't in the bracket was the Sharknado film series.
Yeah.
So we decided, as a host choice, we're going to chuck that one in there. And that's going to be... So that's both of you, dude?
It's Sharknado up against Teeth Facts, as represented by myself.
My favorite article.
Yes.
Historically.
Okay. And Sharknado, my time starts now. Sharknado is a film series made up of 6 mainline series. The series starts Ian Zerzing and Tara Reid as Finn Shepard and April Wexler as a husband and wife who continue to encounter Sharknados, tornadoes filled with sharks wherever they go. These are films that are purposefully ridiculous. The first film being a smash hit, a viral sensation that everyone loved, Sharknado, and it just kept going and getting more and more ridiculous, meaningfully or not. At the last Sharknado, it's about time. They sort of really leaned into how much their whole sort of thing was crazy. They had time travel. They had going back to the Wild West, destroying the original Sharknado so that it would reverse the time port stream.
Polarity. Sorry, is that another yellow card for me?
No, I think that worked.
I think you were leaning towards polarity. You came into the it was sort of a you're on thin ice. Okay, and then next up,
hate red tape
is notoriously Teeth Facts, and Teeth Facts is going to start now. I could not find the original article for Teeth Facts. It was somewhere on the internet, a page that is a list of teeth facts about teeth. I remember one of them is that whales don't have teeth, or they have one teeth, or something like that.
They have one,
and I'll allow it. And the other ones were big ones about how much other mammals just like keep getting teeth. It was a lot about teeth. Some of them were about like spit and mouth things that weren't related to teeth. So I don't know about that. But it was all by this one dentist whose website was filled with teeth facts. And hey, look,
you've got 6 seconds, dude.
Oh man, teeth.
Lachlan is going to be so upset with you. So upset.
Well, what we probably should mention, just if you haven't heard that episode, is that poor Curtis. Poor, poor Curtis.
I just tried to do my article.
Tried
man.
To do his article.
Cigarettes
after
and
Teen
Valentine
Facts.
Was such a good article.
And and Lachlan's bit for the episode was that they'd
to interrupt me.
Interrupt Curtis with random teeth facts.
You
and it was
check that episode
very
out.
Good listening.
Very good.
Oh man.
So Sharknado, sharks or teeth? You got to think about this one.
Here's,
real.
Here's a teeth fact.
Yeah.
Sharks have teeth.
Hey.
There you go.
A lot of them, I'm told.
Yeah. Just to give some more, because that was terrible.
Yes.
I'll cop the yellow card for this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, please.
Squirrels, fun teeth fact, their teeth grow 6 inches a year.
Mm. Yes.
But because they are continuously chewing on stuff, they ground it down faster than they grow. So that there
was some good teeth facts in there.
I want to see a squirrel with very large teeth.
Yeah,
who just
has not been grounding.
Yeah.
Just fangs.
Maybe one day.
Maybe okay. One day. Go watch the Ice Age films. All
guys,
right.
We're lollygagging.
All right.
Oh no. All right. Here we go. Shark or teeth? 3, 2, 1.
Shark.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Cool. Cool.
It wasn't an article. It wasn't like a proper.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it was so good.
It was very funny.
We love you, Lachlan.
Okay.
We bend the rules sometimes.
We do.
But not today.
Not today.
Next up.
Yes.
Bat bomb.
Oh, fuck
as
yeah.
Represented by Curtis.
That was my first article of
that
the season.
That was the first one of the season. Yeah. Mary Toft as represented by Curtis.
My worst article of the season. Well, maybe my best.
Yeah. Here we go. Bat bomb, are you ready?
Yeah.
Your time starts now.
Bat bombs are the most insane weapon of all time. They are metal casings with holes in them, filled to the brim with bats. And then the bats would have little incendiary devices tied to their feet or their wings. So what would happen is, because it was during World War II, and they were trying to come up with new weapons to use against the mainly wooden living and building structures of the Japanese Empire at the time. So they were like, yeah, fuck yeah, we'll send a shitload of bats and they'll set fire to everything. So they would just drop these. The idea was that they were going to drop these bombs, bats would go out, and then they'd just light fire to every fucking thing they could possibly land on. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and Mary Toft.
And Mary Toft.
I was like, and who's going next?
Yeah. Moving right along to Mary Toft. Have you got it there?
I have got it. Yes.
Okay. And Curtis, your time starts now.
Mary Toft was an English woman from Surrey, who in 1726 became the subject of considerable controversy when she tricked doctors into believing she had given birth to rabbits. Now, bear with me. In 1726, Toft became pregnant, but following her reported fascination with the sighting of a rabbit, she miscarried. Her claim to have given birth to the various animal parts prompted the arrival of John Howard, not the politician, a local surgeon, who investigated the matter. He discovered several pieces of animal flesh and duly notified other prominent physicians. The problem was that this guy then bet his career on the fact that she was literally giving birth to animal parts. And then when it came out that she had just literally shoved the animal parts up her hoo-ha to gain a bit of, notoriety, this man's career was fucking ruined.
Good. Very good. Oof. Okay.
We'll go into why she shoved
maybe
them up her hoo-ha.
if it so happens.
I do love referring to a lady's
female
private parts
as
a hoo-ha.
Nice. Gentlemanly.
That's, yeah.
Well, it's respectful.
Yeah.
Question mark.
The hoo-ha.
The hoo-ha.
It's very upper class.
The wen-ha. The bats or Toft?
All right.
Here we go. This one's a thinker.
This one's hard for me.
This one's hard. 3, 2, 1. Toft. Yeah.
It's just so bad.
It is.
It's just so bad. That it's so unfeatured.
It is.
Indeed.
Alrighty.
Next up,
what do we got?
We have the
What are we up to now? What,
This is the eighth pairing.
Out of so we're halfway through.
We're halfway through the first round.
The first round.
First round.
This
the name
one.
Of the first time. Round is
Trimming the Fat.
By the way, I didn't get to do my little intro.
Yeah.
But it's Trimming the Fat. And round eight is the Paint Wars. And Terrare.
Oh no!
So the Paint Wars represented by Ben, and Terrare represented by myself.
Okay.
Ben, are you ready?
Please don't make me vomit this time.
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. now.
All right, so Vanta Black was a shade of black created that is the darkest shade of black, darkest substance known, absorbing up to 99.96% of visible light. And basically what makes it so incredible, apart from, you know, its extraordinary properties, was that it was basically trademarked by a particular artist called Anish Kapoor, who more or less only licensed himself for this usage of this paint. And obviously that sparked a little bit of outrage in the art community. So there was a particular man called Stuart Semple who in retaliation banned Kapoor from buying the strongest shade of pink. But Anish Kapoor was able to get his hands on it and posted a photo to his Instagram with his middle finger dipped in pink.
Very nice.
There you go.
Just shit boys. All shit around. Each other off.
It's the new Bone Wars.
That's it. The paint wars.
Well,
the new Bone Wars.
Yeah. Well.
Let's
could it be?
Could indeed. It be? Could it make it all the way? Mm. It could go all the way.
This it could have been a contender.
I'm going to talk about Terreur, and I'm going to do that right now. Terreur is a boy who ate a whole bunch, couldn't stop. He was an insatiable man. His body was hot to the touch, and he sweated heavily. He constantly had a foul body odor. And the outbreak of the War of the First Coalition, Terreur joined the French Revolutionary Army, where no amount of rations could satisfy him. Doctors would test his capacity for food by feeding him 15 laborers, meals prepared for 15 laborers, and would eat entire meals presented with a live cat. He would eat it. They wanted to make him a spy, so they tried to like put a whole box of contraband into his mouth that he would eat and just like could take across the border, except he failed immediately because he's a rat boy who smells, and they knew he couldn't speak German. It was crazy. He failed as yeah.
Oh, this is gonna be so tough.
Yeah,
I agree. It's also rumored he ate a toddler.
Yes.
Yeah,
that is
that's
true.
Right,
they
I
kicked him out of a
there.
Hospital because it's they were like, did you eat this toddler? He was like, no.
I don't think so.
Help me. All right.
Yeah, fuck.
Paint Wars. Paint or Terreur.
Fuck.
I hate it. It's so tough.
It's so bad. Here we go.
Welcome to our pain, Ben.
Yeah. I feel it now.
As the voice of the people.
I feel it.
Are we ready?
And
do
the people
we have...
are in pain, Curtis. The people are in pain.
People are in pain.
Do we have our answers?
I do.
3, 2, 1. Terreur.
Wars.
Oh,
against my better judgment.
Yeah. Terreur takes it.
I approve.
Ben voted for the Paint Wars, but Terreur. I do like the Paint Wars.
Paint Wars is really good.
I'm gonna have to go with Terreur.
I'm glad I was able to get that Kapoor was able to like get his hands on it, even though he was banned, and posted a picture of his middle finger dipped in the pink.
All right.
Turns out it could not be a contender.
No, right. Could not go all the way.
What have we got next?
Next up, we have A Void, represented by Ben.
Ooh,
a recent one.
Yes.
And
episode 31.
The episode that wasn't deleted.
Yeah.
And the list of fictional magazines as done by myself. A fun episode.
Well, gentlemen, Ben, you're up first.
Yes.
Your time.
Go for it, please.
Oh, thank you. Just because I'm...
Yeah, absolutely.
Your time. Thank you, James. Thank you for your permission. Your time starts now.
Okay. A Void is a French lipogramic novel written by Georges Perec in 1969. It is a 300-page novel that completely omits the letter E. So more or less, Perec is part of a very specific writing group called Ulipo, which writes to constraints in their writing. And the constraint that Perec decided to use was writing an entire huge book without the letter E. And so there are some interesting themes emerging. So the person, it's a mystery novel where there is a missing person called Anton Vowell, and the entire novel is trying to figure out like what's wrong, what's missing, because you know you can't mention that the E's are not there. And there are some also themes as well that some people believe that the book was kind of based on Perec's parents who both died in World War II, and so that's the missing element.
Very good.
Nice.
My word.
Well, all right,
my son.
I am going to represent the list of fictional magazines, and I'm going to do that right now. The list of fictional magazines is a list of magazines that don't exist. They exist in media, so they exist in television shows or comic books or anything like that, movies, etc. I played a game with these articles where I would list one real magazine and one fake one, and Curtis and Hannah had to guess which ones were the real ones, which ones were the fake ones. We had a lot of fun. I believe renowned character actor Lee Pace showed up in that episode.
Lee Pace did show up.
Lee Pace showed up. That article is now gone from Wikipedia. It is completely gone. The only reference of it is when you Google list of fictional magazines. It is a supposed entry in the lists of fictional works. However, heading to that list nets no such results.
How about that?
Welcome to James Keogh's Broken Links.
We're back.
We're back, baby.
You know who else is back? It's Lee Pace, ladies and gentlemen.
It's good to have you.
Right, hey guys, how you doing? It's me, Lee Pace.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It's good to see you all. Anyway, I'm off. Yeah. Good luck with the bracket.
Bye, Lee Pace.
Oh, man, it was great to see Lee Pace.
I'm glad he left because I was about to give him a yellow card.
What a massive guest.
I was about to red card that man. I'm not going to lie. All right. No, we love you, Lee.
Shout out to Lee Pace.
Shout out to Lee Pace. How about that?
If you're listening, and you are.
Oh, he just left the room.
It's true.
Yeah. We have Void. Or magazines.
All right.
3, 2, 1.
Magazines.
Really?
Wow.
Did you guys both vote for Void?
Yeah.
But it's not there anymore.
No. Your magazines aren't there anymore.
No. I'm unbiased. That's fair. All right. Fair enough.
I approve that you think that an article that's no longer on Wikipedia should win the Wikipedia article
award. Are we saying we should have honored the memory of fake magazines?
No, I'm just so intrigued, I guess.
Fair, that's true. As in, like, we need to get more details.
Yeah, no, okay. All right. Void goes through.
Void.
Thank you.
Okay. Next
I was
up.
I was so sure.
Fair enough.
No, that's fair. Next up, we have fucking Austria. No, sorry. I've skipped one. We have Ranger Bill.
Oh, good.
As represented by Curtis. And we have Killdozer. Represented by Ben. Ben, you were very keen to represent this one.
It's a beautiful article.
But before we can get to it, we have to get through Ranger Bill. Are you ready, Curtis?
I am ready, yes.
Your time starts now.
Ranger Bill is a Christian radio program from the 1950s. With over 200 episodes produced, Ranger Bill was a forest ranger located in the town of Knotty Pine along the Rocky Mountains. The show describes the various tales of the adventures of Ranger Bill and his friends. So there's a bunch of different characters. Bill Jefferson, Ranger Bill, the Chief Forest Ranger, Stumpy Jenkins, another Forest Ranger, he's referred to as the Old Timer, and Henry Scott is the teenager ward of Ranger Bill who helps him out in many park ranger tasks and just doesn't like the outdoors as much as Ranger Bill does. And we all memed about that for a very long time and did a bunch of bits. I played Henry Scott and it was probably my best character work ever.
Fuck you, Henry Scott!
Fuck you!
I had to save it. I was so willing to curse Henry. Thank you. Killdozer, Ben, are you ready?
I am ready.
Your time starts now.
So, Killdozer was the nickname given to Marvin John Haymeyer, who was born in 1951, died in 2004. The reason why he was called Killdozer is because he made a bulldozer that killed. More or less, he fitted a bulldozer for a murderous rampage around the city by including giving it several layers of armor that layers of steel and concrete to serve as armor. He used the bulldozer to demolish the Granby Town Hall, the former mayor's house, and several other buildings. So the rampage concluded in his suicide, which he had pretty much planned from the beginning because he more or less built himself into the bulldozer by the end. There was no way that he was going to walk out of that incident alive, and he had a few untimely motivations as well.
I believe also, was nobody hurt?
I don't think there were any casualties.
I'll quickly double check, but I don't
we should probably
think you're right.
We should probably just say, like, it's cool to talk about now because nobody was hurt.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, Ranger or Dozer? Here we go.
Ooh.
Are we ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1. Dozer. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Cool. Dozer is strong.
Strong.
Yes. Unlike Ranger Bill, who is weak.
Ranger Bill is the person. He's the hero we need now.
Yeah. The only weak one is that fucking
Henry Scott.
Fuck that guy.
All right.
Makes it through. Next up, Austria, as represented by myself.
Excellent.
And Zahark.
Oh, yes. Oh, no.
Zahark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Previously pronounced as Zudahark.
Yeah.
We added a syllable because we're terrible and white.
Zahark. I think, is that also represented by myself?
Represented by me.
Okay, Benjamin is doing
that one.
Good. Well, James, you're up first, I believe.
I am.
You good to go?
Gotta find fucking.
Well, don't just type fucking into Google.
Yeah,
That'll come up with not what you want.
Mistake.
That's a different porn podcast.
Yes.
Porncast.
Porncast. Hey. I'm ready.
Your time starts. Anau.
Fucking is an Austrian village in the municipality of Tarsford, located in the region of Wapa, Austria. It's in Austria.
Yeah,
nice. Its name is fucking, which is an English word that means having sex. And so it's very funny. Fucking is most famous for its four traffic signs with its name on them, beside which tourists stop to have their photograph taken, owing to the profane English word with the same spelling. Its popularity and notoriety has led to all of the villagers just getting really sick and tired of it, because they hate people coming in and like making fun of their name, because it's the name of their village where they live all the time. In 2009, it was announced that the village would install CCTV cameras to deter tourists. Basically, yeah.
Gentlemen, I have breaking news. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but this is very important.
Please.
James, are you familiar with Elizabeth Kehoe?
My sister.
Your sister, yes. She's just gotten a tattoo.
Is that so?
Yes.
Well, congrats. I will...
That is just something... Friend of the podcast, Elizabeth Kehoe, yeah. 9 minutes ago on her story, she got a tattoo that said girl power, righteous as fuck. But I just wanted to let you know.
Fair enough.
To break the news to you.
Okay. I'll have to inquire about that later. very good. Though I will say...
This is very important. We are a Wikipedia-based podcast, but we're also like, what's up with our friends podcast?
What's up, hey.
I will say... at schoolies, the year that she graduated,
yeah,
she did get a YOLO tattoo that was completely fake. So this is something that she's been known to do.
Okay, I will just say there is a picture of her on the table at a tattoo parlor, right, getting a tattoo on her Instagram, and then I believe it's true.
There we go.
So congratulations, Liz. Can we get the applause?
Yeah, please.
Congratulations, Liz.
Very exciting. Okay.
Breaking news.
That was fucking Austria.
And breaking news.
And breaking news.
I vote for breaking news.
Next up, we have...
Jahak.
Jahak. Ben, are you ready?
I am ready.
Your time starts now.
Jahak, in Serbian tradition, and a dragon man in Bulgarian, Macedonian, and Serbian traditions, where men believe to have inborn supernatural abilities to protect their estate, village, or region against destructive weather conditions, such as storms, hails, or torrential rains. It was believed that the souls of these men could leave their bodies in sleep to intercept and fight with demonic beings imagined as bringers of bad weather. Having defeated the demons and taken away the stormy clouds they brought, the protectors would return into their bodies and wake up tired. So basically, there are a few common associations between the Jahak and the Dragon Man. The Dragon Man fought against female demons called Ala, which led hail clouds over fields to destroy crops and consume the fertility of fields. Weather demon fighters.
And if they were bad, they turned into vampires.
Yeah. And Lord Byron, hello.
Whatever. Okay.
And fuck you, Lord Byron.
That's
fuck you,
Lord Byron.
That's our trigger word for this one.
Excellent. We have fucking or Jahak.
Uh-huh.
Are we ready? Do we have it?
I do have it.
Yes.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Fucking.
Yeah. Nice. Fucking moves on through.
Oh, that was just what I wanted to do right now. I voted
for
Jahak.
Yeah. No, damn. I hadn't gotten in.
Yes.
Yeah, fucking makes it through, much to the chagrin of the residents of fucking. okay.
What do we got up next, James?
Ooh.
We have... Mud, represented by Ben, and the Subway $5 foot long sub.
Oh, I'm taking such a break.
As represented by me,
I'm loving this.
This is how I was at the start of the episode.
My voice is like, it's gonna be good for round two.
Ben, are you ready with Mud?
Are you ready? Are you ready for Mud?
I don't know if I could be possibly ready.
Okay,
but let's give it a go. Your time starts now.
Mudd was an Australian former politician who served as the 27th Prime Minister of Australia and leader of the Australian Labor Party from 2010 to 2013. She was previously the 13th Deputy Prime Minister of Australia from 2007 to 2010, held the cabinet positions of Minister for Education, Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, and Minister for Social Inclusion from 2007 to 2010. There was a fantastic speech given by Mudd about misogyny by men in Parliament, as well as elsewhere. So that was lots of fun for her, and unfortunately for Mudd, she was disposed by other members of her cabinet and to be replaced by Kevin Rudd. So don't know why Kevin Rudd wanted to replace Mudd, but he just did. That's all I've got to say on Mudd.
I still don't understand
Ben,
the joke.
I'm so sorry.
Yes?
This is a common mistake
that
everyone makes, and I get it, you're like one of our, you know, you're recent to the show.
Yeah.
That's former Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
It wasn't Mudd at all. It was Julia Gillard.
Oh. I just feel foolish now.
No, look, honestly, we've all made the same mistake.
Okay.
Right. We've all made the same. They sound very similar, is the thing.
Look, identical. I looked up Google Images and, you know, just
Julia Gillard. They sound, it's almost as
you're
if
saying
I said
the same word.
I said the same thing twice. I'm sorry.
I'm confusing myself now.
The Subway $5 footlong sub is what I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to start talking about it right now. The Subway $5 footlong sub promotion is a promotion by the fast food restaurant chain Subway, which was launched in the United States in 2008. It coincided with the Great Recession, and the promotion was very successful for the chain, helped them out of the Great Recession while their competitors were struggling in the economic environment. The promotion also helped start an ongoing trend of round price points on consumer goods. In Florida, this is where it all started. It was inside the Jackson Memorial Hospital. They noticed that their sales were slower, so the manager decided to start this $5 footlong sub, which went on to be a widespread success all over the world. No international $5 footlong subs, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't find the facts. I was looking for the facts. But, yeah.
Well, I know what I'm voting for.
All right. Mud or subs? 3, 2, 1. Subs.
Julia.
Oh, common mistake, dude. Yeah, no, so no. Actually... but I believe subs make it through. Thank you, subs.
I can't believe... If you had used the actual article of Mud would have won.
Oh.
Oh, you reckon?
Mud.
You reckon? Mud's you really
do? You think Mud would have made it through?
All time.
Wow.
Mud should have... Mud.
Hang on. No, but I did read out...
Yeah, right, I don't understand.
Oh,
like,
my God. I hate,
did.
This, I hate this joke. No? I hate this joke.
Ah, look.
I will yes and so many
it's
things,
got
but
staying
not
power.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
The Mars Opportunity, as represented by Curtis,
mm-hmm.
versus Carl Tantler, also represented by Curtis.
Lovely.
Here we go.
Opportunity...
Are you ready?
Yep.
Your time starts now.
Opportunity was a robotic rover that was active on Mars from 2004 until the middle of 2018. Launched in 2003 as part of NASA's Mars Exploration Rover program, it landed on Mars on January 25th, 2004, 3 weeks after its twin Spirit touched down on the other side of the planet. What planned as a 90-sol duration of activity, how they measure time on Mars, like days and that sort of thing. Spirit functioned until it got stuck in 2009 and ceased communications in 2010, while Opportunity was able to stay operation for 5,111 souls after landing. And it also sang happy birthday to itself on its birthday. It was really cute. We love Oppy.
That's very good.
So it's a little rover that could.
Mm-hmm. Next up.
Okay.
Carl Tansler.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Your time starts now.
So Zane, again, bringing another killer article. This one was about a guy called Carl Tansler who... He developed an obsession with a young Cuban-American tuberculosis patient of his that carried on well after the disease had caused her death. In 1933, almost 2 years after her death, Tansler removed Hoyer's body from its tomb and lived with the corpse at his home for 7 years until its discovery by Hoyer's relatives and authorities in 1940. So, he was so obsessed with this girl that he would hear her voice and that sort of thing, and he would go and sit by her grave and hear, like, get me, bring me back to your home. So he did it and brought her back to her and lived with the corpse and would use, like, formaldehyde and wigs and, like... Oh, he had a wig of her actual hair that his mum gave her when she died. It's fucked up.
Yes. That's a lot to take in. That is Opportunity or Tansler.
Mm.
Do we have our votes?
I do.
Here we go. Three
cackles from Zane in the background.
3, 2, 1, Tansler. Yeah.
As much as we love Opportunity.
It's not on feature them.
No, we know about Opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so beautiful.
Next up, moving right along.
Yeah, it's a beautiful love story, isn't it?
It is.
Tales all the time.
Hey.
Yeah. All right, next up we have the clandestine clown army versus the virtual boy. So I'm up. I'm representing my clown army, and Curtis is representing the virtual boy.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to start, and my time starts Now, the clandestine insurgent rebel clown army is an anti-authoritarian left-wing activist group that uses clowning and non-violent tactics to act against corporate globalism, war, and other issues. Essentially, what this group is a group of clowns who go to rallies and protests, and rather than doing anything violent, they make, they do clown things. They have water pistols and feather dusters. They have a recruitment poster that has a lot of differences between the clown army and the US army. For example, a clown is a clown is a clown, etc., etc. Fight in a war of the US army, tug of war in the clown army. So lots of funny, it's making fun of these protests. In these protests, not of these protests.
Yeah.
It's not mocking the protest. No. Anyway, the virtual boy.
Indeed.
Are you ready, Curtis?
Yep.
Your time starts now.
So you guys know VR, the thing that kind of only got good in like the last 16 months? Mm-hmm. Well, they tried to do it in the 80s. sorry, the 90s, I should say. The Virtual Boy is a 32-bit tabletop video game console developed and manufactured by Nintendo. Released in 1995, it was marketed as the first console capable of displaying stereoscopic 3D graphics. The player uses the console like a head-mounted display, placing their head against the eyepiece to see a red monochrome display. The game uses a parallax effect to create the illusion of depth. Sales failed to meet targets, and by early 1996... Nintendo ceased distribution of the game development, releasing only 22 games for the system. So it is one of the greatest failures of the video game, the early video game generations. And yeah, it was all in red is the main thing.
Yes.
It was just so shit.
Bit of a headache.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have clowns versus virtual. I couldn't find a good way to shorten that.
VB.
VB.
Oh,
VB. Yeah. Ah, boy. Yeah. Clowns versus VB. Are we ready? 3, 2, 1. Clowns.
VB. Very well.
What did we have? Sorry, I didn't...
I said clowns. VBs.
I see. Yes. Send in the clowns. The clowns.
Okay. Very topical at the moment with Joker having just come
Indeed.
Out.
Indeed. Well, didn't think about it that
and
way.
And It's Part 2. So many clown films out
A lot of clowns in our roads. Next up, Butthole Road.
Classic.
Butthole Road.
Represented by Ben. And Fata Bene Fratelli, represented by myself.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Yes. Butthole Road, Ben, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Gentlemen.
Please.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Your starts.
Come on.
Okay, ready?
You had one job.
My starts time now. Butthole Road is the former name of a street in the town of Connersburg, Doncaster, England, within the county of South Yorkshire. The short residential street gained fame for its suggestive name and was frequented by tourists who would stop to take photos by the street sign. Residents living on the street experienced issues with their address as they were refused services due to the name and were the target of pranks and jokes. After privately raising funds for a new street sign and seeking approval from the local government, the residents had the name changed in 2009. Basically, it's very similar to fucking in many ways, residents of Butthole Road were determined to have the name changed to deter tourists, there was a copycat kind of situation in 2015 where Butthole Lane in Leicestershire planned to keep the name, not to be bothered by puerile humour.
Very nice.
And as a side note,
gorgeous.
Fucking Austria is a link at the end of this article,
nice.
As well as Grope Cunt Lane.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, what?
I don't think we talked about.
I don't think we covered that one.
Grope Cunt Lane.
Jesus, that's an upsetting name.
One more time. Grope Cunt Lane.
Mm. Grope Cunt Lane.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That goes down smooth.
Yeah, it really does.
Okay, I'm going
to
talk about...
That's probably one of the most upsetting things to say.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Like, that's bad.
It's a lot of connotations in that one.
Flops off the tongue rather than rolls off the tongue.
Donnie Trump's favourite street. Now.
Yeah.
Fata
Bene Fratelli, I'm going to start right now. Fata Bene Fratelli Hospital is a hospital located on the western side of the Tiber Island in Rome. It is known for Syndrome K. This is during 1938 when Italy introduced their anti-Semitic laws. The hospital, what they did is they held Jewish people under the guise of a false sickness called Syndrome K. And so during the Nazi raid of the Jewish ghetto in Rome on October 16th, 1943, Jewish escapees sought refuge at the hospital. They would pretend to be sick. They wouldn't, the doctors wouldn't let people, you know, the Nazis in, saying, oh, these people, they have Syndrome K. You can't see them. You can't touch them. Otherwise, you'll get it too. Which essentially prevented the Nazis from coming to take the Jewish people. That's about all I had to say about it, you know? Yeah,
fair enough.
I think saved a bunch of lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what do we have? We have Syndrome K.
We have butthole and hospital.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Are we ready? Do we have it?
Yeah.
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Hospital.
Yeah, good.
Couldn't really let butthole in that one.
Especially against, fair enough.
Of all things.
All right. Hospital makes it through. Heading into the final round.
Segment of act.
Pairing.
Round one.
Of round one.
Yep. What do we got?
We have the elephant's foot, as described by myself, and the kangaroo, the superhero, also described by myself.
Super villain, thank you.
Sorry, the super villain, you're right. In the superhero realm. Awesome. Let me find the elephant's foot, because I'm knee deep in Wikipedia articles. I went all out for this one. All right, elephant's foot.
Your time starts now.
The elephant's foot is a nickname given to a large mass of corium formed during the Chernobyl disaster in April 1986. Oh, fuck. It is this big lump of radioactive materials that poured through into a building during Chernobyl that is literally unable to be looked at for too long of a time. Otherwise, you will die of radiation poisoning. At the time of its discovery, about 8 months after formation, radioactivity near the elephant's foot was approximately 8,000 roentgens, or 80 grays per hour, which is a lot, delivering a 50-50 lethal dose of radiation within 5 minutes. Since that time, the radiation intensity has declined enough that in 1996, the elephant's foot was visited by the deputy director, who took photographs and using an automatic camera. The camera melted when the photos were taken. Because it's fucked.
It is. Look up a picture. I'd
yellow card.
Oh.
What, because I went over?
Yeah, fair.
I'll take it.
I can do it too, baby. Okay.
Kangaroo. I'm going to talk about the kangaroo, and my time starts now. Kangaroo is the name of two fictional characters, supervillains appearing in American comic books published by Marvel Comics. Both are noted for their leaping ability. The first kangaroo was introduced in The Amazing Spider-Man in 1970. The second kangaroo was seen in Cage 13 in 1993 and made his debut in The Spectacular Spider-Man in 1997. This is a guy from Sydney who doesn't have any superpowers, but studied kangaroos and decided to become a supervillain. The original Frank Oliver ate and traveled with kangaroos, developing a leaping ability that rivaled the animals he studied. Seeing an opportunity to make money, he decided to parlay his newfound leaping ability in a boxing career. He went on to fight Spider-Man for some reason. Brian Hibbs went on to take the helm of the kangaroo.
Good. Strong.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, so we got kangaroo.
Kangaroo and foot.
And foot. All right. Are we ready to go?
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
All right.
We don't get a lot of Australian. We got him and Captain Boomerang, and they're both. but unfortunately,
surrounded by stereotypes.
Yeah,
that's all we got to deal with it on a daily basis.
Alrighty, so that is the end of round one. So James, break it down for us. What have we got going through to round two?
Heading on into round two, we have Elmer McCurdy versus Hubert Blaine Longname. We have William Henry Rankin versus Bruce Willis's discography. We have the Corrupted Blood Incident versus Sharknado. We have Mary Toft versus Terrea. We have
Mary Toft versus Terrea.
Yeah.
Wow. Fuck yeah.
Wow.
We have a Void versus Killdozer. We have fucking Austria versus Subway Footlong $5 subs. We have Carl Tanzler versus the Clandestine Clown Army. And we have the Fata Bene Fratelli, hospital versus the elephant's foot. That is all going to come together in round two.
But first, I think we're going to swing to one of the guests we had on this season. Good friend, your good friend, my good friend, yes. James's good friend, Tully Grimley, ladies and gentlemen. Tully, why don't you tell us what your favorite article of the season was?
Hi there, everybody. My name's Tully Grimley, friend of the podcast, and I would love to nominate the quickie brought by Chris Payton, the horrendous day-to-day chronicle of the life of Christine Weston Chandler. Such a horrible hole in the internet where this poor person's life has been chronicled, presumably against their will, and really just highlighting the worst things that the internet can bring. I just thought such a horrendous rabbit hole was worthy of a second mention, and a little bit of a warning against doing this shit again. Love you all.
Thank you very much, Tully. Great to hear from you.
Great to hear from that boy every day of the week.
And a good choice as well.
Absolutely,
because I had forgotten about that one.
Yeah,
that was one that Chris brought in.
Fucked up.
Pretty fucked up.
Yeah, all right. So that is, we have broken all 32 articles of the year down into our top 16.
Trimmed the fat.
Trimmed the fat. What's the name of our next round, James?
Next round is going to be round two. Unfeatured versus unfeatured debates. Trademark.
Yeah. All right. So that is where we're going to leave this episode this week. Mm-hmm. Join us again next time, where we're going to get even deeper and talk about some of the more intricate details of the articles in head-on debates.
Yes.
James versus myself.
Yes.
With Ben as the voice of the people as our mediator.
Woo!
Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We can't wait to see you again keep going further. And
absolutely.
James, I'm going to throw it to you, baby.
All right. Well, skip the day of the day. Who needs it?
Who needs it?
Today's day is Buddy Oofa Day. Happy, happy Oofa Day. And till next time, browse responsibly.
Hello, I am Jonathan.
I'm Harper.
And together we run a weekly bastard podcast called Rateloid, where we rate and review Vocaloids like Hatsune Miku and also go off on strange anime tangents.
And if you don't know what Vocaloid is, don't worry, we'll tell you.
In fact, we encourage you to listen so you can join us on this beautiful journey together. Listen and enjoy.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.